This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yo, Hulkamaniacs! It's Thanksgiving night, and this is the happiest time of year for all the maniacs, brother. You know, me and all my little Hulksters, we got a lot of things to be thankful for. Number one, we're thankful for being happy and very healthy. We're thankful for having time to share with our loved ones. We're also thankful that Hulkamania is still the strongest force in the universe. And after the turkey's done, after the blessings are all done, I can tell you what the Hulkster's mostly happy about. It's Survivor Series time, and I'm thankful for my team of Hulkamaniacs.
I'm thankful because I'm rich and you're not.
I'm thankful for having Damien and the DDT.
You know what we're thankful for?
We don't have to fight each other.
Oh, yeah. I am thankful that I am the only man worthy of being the Macho King.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm thankful for the privilege of living right here in the good old U.S. of A.
Tough guy.
I'm thankful I've got the big earthquake on my side.
What I'm thankful for Thanksgiving? For my polka dots.
I'm thankful for the judges I serve.
I'm thankful for wrestling, cutting, and strutting.
I'm thankful for my good looks.
I'm thankful for having the most ravishing body in the WWF.
I'm thankful because I ate Ricky Rude.
I am thankful for being the world's smartest man.
I'm thankful for being absolutely perfect.
Yeah, we're thankful for having Sonny stuffing in our turkey tonight!
I'm thankful for spending Thanksgiving with all the members of the Heenan family.
Thanksgiving every day, but especially this day, as the Warriors give me the intention to deliver the pair at Survivor Series, it is going to be a war!
Hey folks, and welcome back to the Rewind series here on Place to Be Nation. This time of year, we're going to be taking a look at Survivor Series. And I'm your host, Stephen Graham, and we have drawn the lovely 1989 version, which I'm very excited to talk about because it's my favorite show ever. And to do so, I got a couple great guests here. Dan McGinn, how are you doing?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm pretty good. It's cold. I think it's 0 degrees today, so ready for the winter.
Coming from Massachusetts, it's a balmy 42, I believe, right now. But
I don't know what that is in normal temperature.
And that's like 100 Celsius.
Oh, okay. That's right. So this will be a very fascinating show for those of you new to our airwaves, because for once in maybe a lifetime, we will have more Canadians on the panel than Americans, so I will do my best not to be ganged up on from my neighbors up north.
That's not what happens when Canadians get together.
You know we're scared of you, right?
You guys have a little more bombs than we have. But I think we just heard our other guest, Aaron. George, how are you doing?
I am well, Stephen, and Dan, we're not going to gang up on you, and if we do, it'll be very polite.
Well, I'd imagine. I mean, just our pre-show banter was just very, very light, fluffy, and peaceful, and I feel right at home, like I'm being embraced by many of kittens.
That's what we are. We're kittens. Thank you. Someone finally said it. You know, it's funny, Stephen, you mentioned the cold, because it's maybe like 1 or 2 degrees here, but like for all our talk about being the men of the North, we're such bitches the first time it gets cold.
I don't complain about winter, because I find that if you complain in more than one season, you seem like a whiny little jerk. So I pick summer, and I stick to summer, and I'll complain during the summer, but I will never say a bad word about the winter temperature. So
see, we don't have much. Oh, we just have construction season?
Yeah.
You know, like everything is getting fixed at the same time.
It's just too hot. I don't like summer.
Yeah.
But Survivor Series squarely doesn't take place in the summer. It takes place in the American Thanksgiving, or I like to say the closest Thursday to my birthday. But let's.
Why does your birthday not change day? What's happening up there?
I don't know. But the 1989 Survivor Series, I think, is interesting because it's the only one of these Survivor Series that took this format. In 88 and 87, they had four teams of five on each side with the giant tag team mixed in there. And then in 89, they go to five matches with four on each side, and the tag teams are interspersed throughout. And then by 1990, they had the Battle Royal, and then it goes to all hell after that. So I think 89 is a real interesting year because it's the only one they do of this format. And Dan, I was wondering, what did you think of the 89 format, and what do you think if they should bring the 89 format back now that pay-per-views don't matter and they're on the network anyways?
Well, when I secured tickets to last year's Survivor Series in Boston, I was just begging. I was pleading for them to return to kind of an old school feel to it because I really enjoy the elimination matches. And this year in particular, they really embraced. I mean, you had four on four, but you had like guys in the mid card together. You had main event guys together. You had really good pairings that kind of furthered feuds. So even like mid card, lower card feuds were being answered at this show. They really got behind the whole team name concept, which, you know, nowadays it's like, hi, it's Team Cena versus Team Rollins and all this garbage. And no, like, come up with something. Give me the C Nation versus the Authority.
The Chain Gang.
Exactly. Give me something like that. I mean, you know, 4x4s, King's Court, Roddy's Rowdies. Like, all these names were just so cool, and it just sort of added a little bit more, like, personalization to this. It was like, oh, well, I'm really. And you know what else you got from looking at the teams was. You kind of had that sense back in the late 80s that, well, they're on a team, so they're all hanging out afterwards. They're like, they're watching each other's backs. They're, you know, traveling together because they're on the same Survivor Series team. You just don't get that feel nowadays when it's just sort of generic Team 1 versus generic Team 2, and that's if you even get an elimination match on the card.
Yeah, sure. And also, like, in a bunch of the TV shows leading up to the pay-per-view, you'll have, like, Rick Martel versus Tito with all the team members in their corners at ringside just to give that little amount of team. And there'd be all these team promos, which were quite epic. We saw a couple on the show. But, Aaron, what do you think about this format in particular?
Obviously, I love it. Like, I love the old Survivor Series. I do wish they would have had the tag match. I understand why they didn't, but I'm such a mark for those like 20 guys around the ring. And the only thing that's weird about the format too is kind of how they broke up the Hart Foundation as opposed to every other team. But I really wish they'd go back to this. You're right, especially now that pay-per-views don't matter, because it was such an easy way to build storylines for the future in a match. Hmm. Instead of them having to, like, I don't know, run into each other backstage or like run over someone's motorcycle or something like that. Like, you're able to like just take something that happens in the match and build on that. And I think that's actually something that's missing a lot today is that kind of storytelling. And that's why I wish they'd bring it back.
Yeah, I think, yeah. And I prefer 89 to 90 or 88 or 87 just because you had more mixture. You had the teams mixed in with the regular wrestlers. It seemed like more of a team than just five singles guys working together. If you have two singles guys with a tag team, it just seemed like they got along a lot better.
Yeah, and one other thing that I like more from 89 than all the other ones you mentioned, and I'm sure we'll get to this, is I find that like it's almost like everyone's at their peak level of overness.
Mm.
Like it's just crazy the reactions some of them get, and there's one of those guys in every match.
Well, yeah, it's almost like the teams were set up that way. You had, like, the captains were probably guys that were upper mid-card, if not main event status already. And then you had that kind of mid-card stalwart in that second spot. And if you're kind of, like, visualizing what the teams looked like in their little boxes going into the pay-per-view. And then at the bottom, you either have, like, the hot tag team or the tag team competitors. And, you know, there was only, like, there was one match with Hacksaw and Savage where you had basically four single guys together, but they had that format of like the upper card guys with a tag team taking on another group of upper card guys in the tag team, and it was really kind of neat. You know, like I said before, it's like I could actually picture Demolition and Hulk Hogan chilling, you know, hanging out after shows, you know, or some of the others, but
sitting at IHOP together.
Yeah, but it was also just a great way at the time because they didn't have singles matches and they didn't have things like heat beforehand or anything like that, where everybody basically on the roster got a pay-per-view payday. I thought that was really cool too.
Oh yeah. So let's get into the show. And for my money, the starting introduction to this pay-per-view is the greatest introduction to any pay-per-view they've ever done, because not only do you get the great Vince McMahon announcing the teams with a great voice and the boxes for everyone with the team names, but you also get not every wrestler, but the majority of the wrestlers giving their what they're thankful for the year. And it's they do such a great job of like playing through their characters. And what I'm going to do is we're going to run down what everyone's thankful for, and we'll just go back and forth. I'll ask Dan, and then I'll ask Aaron, so we're not going to spend a million years talking about every wrestler's thanks, but we'll just go through the list here. So, Dan, Hulk Hogan is thankful because he's happy and very healthy. Mm-hmm. He has time to share with his loved ones. He's still the strongest force in the universe. But most of all, it's Survivor Series time, and he's thankful for his team of Hulkamaniacs. Do you think Hulk's being sincere there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's got Jake. He's got the snake to protect him. He's got Demolition with their crazy masks. He's got gold. He has gold. They have gold. It was just you know, of course, he's thankful for the team. I mean, of course, we'll talk about what happened to that team later on. But, I mean, yeah. You know, Hulkamania was running wild. I was a kid. I was 8 years old when this came out. The first guy I wanted to see when I was watching my first ever pay-per-view was Hulk Hogan, and they delivered with that promo right at the beginning. It was just it was perfect. I was hooked right from the start.
Awesome. So Aaron, Ted DiBiase is thankful because he's rich and you're not.
Fuck Ted DiBiase. I hate Ted DiBiase.
Like, is there a better like one line to explain the Ted DiBiase character?
Yeah, no, it's everything in 1 second. He's got, you know, he's got the money in his hand, he's got the black on him, like everything you need to know is there in that moment.
I think he even throws the money up in the air too, like he's like, yeah, I'm rich and you're not. Throws it up in the air, is like, I have so much money, I could just throw this all on the ground and not even care.
Such a great moment. Which leads to DiBiase's person he's feuding with, Jake the Snake Roberts, who's thankful for Damian and the DDT. So he doesn't return Hogan's thanks for being on the team.
No, but I mean, this is a snake that scared off Andre the Giant. So, you know, at the time, I'd like to have that as my second as well.
Yeah, and I never got the impression Jake liked any other people.
Speaking of that, next up we got Demolition, who are very thankful that they don't have to fight each other like they did at the Royal Rumble that year. So
can't argue. You're right.
Then we got Dan. We got Randy Savage coming up here, who he's thankful that he's the only man worthy of being called the Macho King. I don't think anyone else would want to be called the Macho King, do you?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, no one else could fit that role, and Randy Savage is one of a kind, you know?
All right, this is a good one for Aaron here. It's Jim Duggan, and he's thankful for having the privilege of living in the USA, tough guy.
Great. Good for Duggan, man. Again, like exact capsulation of who that guy is. America and wood.
So, Dan, you got Dino Bravo, who's thankful he has the big earthquake on his side.
It's Perthquake.
I think I should have switched to I talked to you for those last two.
Yeah, seriously. if I have a big earthquake on my side, I'd be very thankful indeed. Although maybe I wouldn't eat as much at the Thanksgiving table.
See, if the teams are hanging out together, like, I imagine them all just waiting on Earthquake to finish his meal. For like, can we just go, please?
So, Aaron, you got probably the most famous one, the most quoted, is Dusty Rhodes is thankful for his polka dots.
My polka dots. And I'm thankful for his incredible lisp, too, because that's spectacular.
Big Boss Man, he is thankful for the kind of justice that he serves.
He carries a big stick and a ball and chain too. I mean, you know, it's that was a guy we'll see that really had some star quality, and he was not anyone you wanted to sit down to for dinner with, I don't think, at this point.
But Aaron, would you like to sit down for dinner with Brutus Beefcake, who's really the most thankful for wrestling, cutting, and strutting?
No. I love how he has to throw in wrestling. Like, he's right. You're really privileged to have a job, Brutus.
Next up, we got Rick the Martyr Martel, who is thankful for his good looks.
Well, Rick had it going on at this point, man. I mean, he had the sunglasses, he had the scarf. It just worked for him. I mean, you would be thankful, too, if you looked like that.
Here's someone who also thinks much about themselves, Ravishing Rick Rude, who's thankful that he has the most ravishing body in the WWF. So, Aaron, what I ask you, who has the most ravishing body, Rude or Martel?
Ooh, that's tough. Very tough. If they were in the same ring, there would be no women allowed in the building because they'd just explode. I would say Rick Rude because of the mustache.
Okay.
Kind of a manly, like, I could see Rick Rude doing porn, but then I could see Martel doing porn too. Maybe they should both do porn.
I think the difference is, and again, this is just because one came right after the other. I think Rude went a little bit too heavy on the oil for this promo, and he just looked, you know, just pumped up to the gills. Like, he just, I don't know. I mean, I'm not. This is the most I'll talk about a male's anatomy all night. I promise.
Oh, so, I don't think so. We'll see what happens when we get to the match.
So, next up, Dan, you have Roddy Piper, who's thankful that he ain't Ricky Rude, and then he blows a kiss.
I like this because, again, for a new fan, they weren't necessarily sure. They might not know what all the feuds are, but you kind of had a feeling just from that one little quick snippet that, you know, Piper and Rude were facing off tonight, and that's why he did the parody. So I thought that was pretty neat.
Awesome. And then we got the genius, who's thankful that he's the world's smartest man. Does he prove it later? We'll get
to
that.
With a poem?
We'll get to that, I guess. We'll get your opinion then. So then we got Mr. Perfect, who is thankful that he's absolutely perfect, which I guess he proves.
Yeah.
Then we got the Bushwhackers, who I guess don't care about wrestling at all. They're just thankful that they're stuffing in turkey.
And sardines. Do they say sardines, too?
I'm not sure. They were hard to understand.
I think it's like sardine stuffing or something like that. And I don't know what that is, but if they like it, to each their own, I guess.
And then we have Bobby the Brain Heenan, who's thankful that he's get to be spending Thanksgiving with all the members of the Heenan family. That one might not come true for him.
No. Yeah. Poor guy.
And then finally we have the Ultimate Warrior, who says a lot of things that I don't understand, and I tried, but I do know that he said at the end is, it is going to be a war.
That's all you need from that speech, though, really.
Which leads us right into Vince McMahon doing the great announcement of teams. So, which leads right into Jesse and Gorilla. We're at the Rosemont Horizon in Chicago. And, okay, Jesse's got a furry coat and a pilgrim hat. And Gorilla goes, direct from landing on Plymouth Rock, it's Jesse the Pilgrim Ventura. Which Jesse responds with, speaking of bodies, because he says, he first corrects him and says, I'm Jesse the Body, not Jesse the Pilgrim. Then he says, speaking of bodies, take a look at yours. All you need are wings and a little more loose skin on that chin of yours, and you wouldn't be standing next to me today. You'd have been browned and served to our entire armed forces overseas, and there still would have been lots of leftovers. So I think this just sets the tone for one of my favorite nights of announcing in wrestling history. Gorilla and Jesse are on fire tonight, and I think this is just the start. After this three parts of an introduction, and then Jive Soul Brawl starts, how excited were you at this moment, Aaron?
I'm so excited. It's so cool to see all those guys come out to that song. Like, Honky Tonk Man, I've never seen him not dance, and he just has no clue how to move his body to Jive Soul Bro. And I also love that the cop is walking out with a pimp. Like, as though it's nothing.
Where was your excitement level at, Dan?
Oh, I was very excited. This was the first pay-per-view I was allowed to order. The previous pay-per-view, SummerSlam, I begged and begged, and I guess I really hadn't proven that I watch wrestling enough for the parents to want to make an investment in it yet. But by Survivor Series, it was at a fever pitch, and they allowed me to order this one. So, I mean, they could have legitimately had jobbers come out, like, you know, the Brooklyn Brawlers and Barry Horowitz's, and I would have been excited just to know that I was allowed to order this pay-per-view. So when you factor in the like, Boss Man, Jive Soul Bro, I mean, it was really cool. They came out almost in the exact same order in which they were announced on the intro, and then you had the managers come out, and it was like, wow, this is
together. They come out together. That's so cool.
This is big time. And But the one thing actually that really, during that announcement, there was the fact that Akeem was taken out of the mix and Bad News Brown was put in was a kind of a shock. So I hadn't even really recovered fully from that yet. I was like, wait, what? What? Bad News Brown is in this match? Like, where did that come from? Where's Akeem? Is Akeem okay? There was all these questions going off in my head when the match had started. I was basically like jumping up and down on the couch when the event finally started.
So good stuff here. And Gorilla likes to mention here that it is actually 6-on-4 because of the two managers. Jesse gets a little annoyed, but that's a running theme throughout the show, and we'll come back to it. I do really enjoy that Jimmy Hart and Slick are coming out together because they're the two team managers of this team, which is really good. So, like you said, it's the Enforcers, which is the Big Boss Man, Bad News Brown, who replaces an injured Akeem, so no Twin Towers here, Rick the Model Martel, and the Honky Tonk Man. And they're taking on the Dream Team of Dusty Rhodes, Brutus Beefcake, the Red Rooster, and Tito Santana. And the three guys come out to Brutus's music, and Dusty comes out alone at the end, which leads to Gorilla Monsoon somehow thinking that Brutus is the captain, even though it's called the Dream Team. I'm not sure.
He's got a lot of balls calling that team the Dream Team. Considering who else is on this card.
He certainly does. And I like that the match starts off and Gorilla mentions that nobody has sat down since we started 1 minute ago. So, you know, it's going to be a good night. But so the first thing to really talk about here is that you have the continuation of the Rick Martel Tito Santana feud. So what are your thoughts on that one, Dan?
It's a feud that they always had in their back pocket that they could work with, and they seem to always kind of bring it back every now and again around this time period, but never actually blew it off on a pay-per-view, I guess, besides this one. They were on opposite teams. They definitely continued to bring it up, even though Strikeforce had been gone for many months by this point. They still wanted to kind of make you remember that they were a pretty formidable team back in the day. And here they are on opposing sides, and they both got some licks in. And, you know, eventually, as we go through this, that at this point, Martell, and I think Martell pretty much got the last laugh in all their encounters. I could be wrong about that, but once again, the handful of trunks was what did in Tito this time. You'd think after teaming with a guy for so long, you wouldn't fall for such basic heel tactics, but I do recall, because again, this was the first time I'd watched a Survivor Series or any pay-per-view, that man, Tito's gone. Like, because the way that Jesse and Gorilla built it up, it's like when you get eliminated, you have to leave the building. You're done. Your night is over. Like, they really reinforced that point. So when Tito gets pinned in kind of shady fashion, I was like, oh man, I hope he has a ride. You know, I hope he gets home safe. You know, so again, that's the thoughts of an 8-year-old back in the day.
I love that Tito really hung on to those Strikeforce tights too.
Oh yeah. He hung on those till he became the El Matador.
Till he went back to his roots.
Yeah. His roots. Oh, God. So, like you said here, Martell pulls the trunks about 9 minutes in. Fun little start here. There is some little bits on the Dusty Bossman feud. They square off for a bit. But before we talk about that, I just want to mention that Jimmy Hart and Slick's celebration of Tito being eliminated is absolutely tremendous. Like, jumping up and down and hugging that they've got the advantage here. So at this point, we see Sapphire in the crowd, and she's just described as a fan, and they only have the camera on her for a second, and then they move on. Dusty Rhodes hits a dropkick, which was pretty amazing.
And Jesse loses his mind.
Yes, he does.
I think he says something like, can you imagine the strength to get that behemoth in the air?
So why don't you talk about the Dusty Rhodes Big Boss Man feud, Aaron? Or how they interact in this match, at least.
Sorry, can you repeat that, Steven?
Oh, sorry. If you could talk about the Dusty Boss Man feud and how they interacted in this match.
It's great. Like, number one, it's like, it's crazy how over Dusty is. Like, the crowd, when he comes out at the beginning, they lose their minds, and they lose their minds whenever he's in the ring. And I think they do a great job of keeping them somewhat apart until the end in this one. So I think it's a great continuation. I love that, like, it is kind of predicated on the boss man calling him a thief for stealing the nightstick, which I love. like he's still clinging to some notion of justice.
Yeah.
I mean, not to get ahead of ourselves, but if you're going to talk about the Dusty boss man feud in this match, the boss man just beats the shit out of him after the match, which leads to one of my favorite things in wrestling, which is when someone is hurt or injured, but their music is playing.
Yeah.
Like, there's this one moment where they show a wide shot and Dusty's handcuffed to the ropes and, like, just unconscious, bleeding, and Brutus is tending to him, but American Dream and the cowbell are, like, hitting. it's one of my absolute favorite things.
That's great, great stuff. But another great moment is a callback to last year's Survivor Series where Bad News Brown is tagged in, and Bossman's holding someone, or Bad News, I guess, is holding one of his opponents, and Bossman accidentally hits him, and Bad News just says, screw this, and he walks out and gets counted out. So I know Akeem was injured, and it was last minute, but he couldn't have found, like, anyone, like Nikolai Volkoff, anyone to replace him instead of Bad News Brown?
Oh, yeah, I think it's funny. You know, you think they would... They would know not to team with this guy. I think even Honky was on the same team as Bad News
was,
the year before.
Yeah, so he was.
So it's like, you know, you think, hey man, listen, by the way, if you're gonna team with this guy, he might run out on you. He doesn't like people. He's a loner, you know. But I'm sure they didn't think about that. They're probably like, hey, we need to book this on the fly. What can we do? Oh, I know, we can have Bad News not be a good teammate and walk out, and that's basically what happened there. But it's funny because, like, him being in the ring with the Red Rooster always kind of like the Red Rooster should never be in a fight with a guy like Bad News Brown. Visually, yeah. it's a mismatch. In reality, it's a mismatch. Like, I mean, you almost feared for Terry Taylor's life in the ring with the Bad News Brown.
Well, and Bad News too, he spends the whole match yelling at someone in the front row until he gets in, and then he just kills Taylor. But yeah,
Bad News, quite the character. Speaking of great characters, the next thing that really happened in the match is Bruce Beefcake hitting a high knee, taking out the Honky Tonk Man, who I thought was really feeling it in this match for, like, the first time since he, like, lost the IC title. He was shooking and jiving. He was dropping fist drops. I think Honky was looking really good in this one. What do you think, Aaron?
I think it's finally Brutus Beefcake gets to pin the Honky Tonk Man after years of chasing him. The thing about this era, and that's what makes it, one of the things that makes it great, is the characters are so well defined. So, like, everything Honky Tonk Man does is to tell the story of that character. Like, even the way he punches, the way he moves, and that just is just a definition that's missing today. But that's what made everything so much more memorable.
One of my favorite things about the Honky Tonk Man is they originally brought him in as a big babyface Jerry Lawler clone doing the Honky Tonk Man character as friends with Hulk Hogan before they had to turn him heel because they realized the crowd completely hated him.
It's like making the West Texas rednecks heels in the South.
Yeah.
Right.
Against the rappers.
Doesn't make much sense. Yep. You spoke a little bit about the Rooster here, but the Boss Man does his Boss Man Slam, just destroys him a couple minutes later. Anything else to say about Rooster? Yeah, go ahead.
I just can't believe he lasts that long. And like, it's funny because in an era with all these, like, there's a policeman in the ring, there's a barber, the Rooster is still that step too much. Like, please stop clucking your head like a rooster. Like,
well, Gorilla says he's made giant strides in the last year, but he did go from the main event to the opening match, so I don't know how many strides he made.
I'm sure Tito and Honky and some of these guys that were eliminated earlier than the Red Rooster are probably thinking, what did I do to deserve this? Why am I going out before this guy?
Before the chicken.
With the red mohawk.
So up next, so it's Boss Man 2-on-1 against him as he's taking on Brutus and Dusty. Dusty hits a flying crossbody for the pin. So Dusty and Brutus are the sole survivors here, but then we get that beatdown that we talked about there. Anything else to say about that?
crazy beatdown, obviously. It's funny how Dusty Rhodes during this time period could win a match, but then still, you know, get beaten down, you know, basically the whole win the battle but lose the war type of analogy. The little squirt of blood that he was able to muster for the occasion really kind of sold the beat down. But then, of course, I think the best part, the most memorable part about the whole thing was Boss Man's promo after the beat down. I mean, Aaron alluded to the winner's music while he's being carted off type of thing, but that promo by Big Boss Man afterwards was phenomenal. Like I said earlier, kind of star making. Like, we knew this guy was probably something special anyway with his, like, feud with Hogan and the whole Twin Towers thing, but then for him to just completely eviscerate Dusty Rhodes like that, you still had that good feeling that Beefcake and Dusty won, but at the end of the day, the big star, I think, of the match was the Big Boss Man.
And Dusty's music kept playing throughout the promo. Yeah.
And, like, we forgave the Boss Man, like, a month and a half later or whatever, and turned him face.
Because he doesn't take bribes. That's one step too far.
He doesn't like slaves either. Oh, that's too much. He could pummel a man nearly to death with a nightstick and say he forfeits his human rights, but no.
Okay, so that's I think, a fun... What do you think about the match overall? Good way to start the show, Aaron?
Oh, yeah, because everybody's hot. It's just... I'm going to keep saying this about the show, I'm sure, but everything is fun to watch. There's nothing boring, and there's nothing. Even the serious bits are fun for me. So,
Dan.
Yeah, you had a lot of popular guys. You probably wanted to see the face team go up in the first match. Brutus Beefcake continues to look like a stud right now when it comes to, he had two eliminations. He had teamed with Hogan the pay-per-view before. They were starting, we didn't know this at the time, but right after this match, they started hyping another big match featuring the whole no-holds-barred angle. So they wanted to keep Beefcake hot going into that. So, you know, it was probably a good decision to have him win because he's riding Hogan's coattails. But yeah, it definitely kept everybody excited as the card would unfold.
Oh, yeah. Like Aaron said, just a lot of fun. You know, just fun characters, fun announcing, fun crowd. Just a lot of weird mixing and matching you don't get to see. Just a lot of fun.
And well booked.
Yes, like, very well booked.
Like, in the end, like, Boss Man got pinned, but everybody came in, kind of came out looking somewhat strong, so it didn't matter.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe not Tito.
Except for the rooster, I guess.
The rooster, too. So let's move on here. We got a promo by the 4x4s, which are Jim Duggan, Ron Garvin, the Mighty Hercules, and Bret the Hitman Hart. Dan, what do you think of this foursome?
I made this comment when I was viewing this before the show. I looking at the team, Hacksaw Jim Duggan, Rugged Ronnie Garvin, the Mighty Hercules, and Bret Hart. And it made me think, when I was probably watching this, why is somebody as cool as Bret Hart hanging out with the likes of those three guys? Like where in reality would that make sense at all? You're part of a good tag team. You already have muscle with the Anvil, and now all of a sudden you're like, you know what, bro? I think right now I'm gonna hang out with the guy, the cross-eyed guy who has the 2x4, the guy who carries a chain, the guy who has a shin guard. That looks like the crew I want to run with for the next few months. That's cool with me. But but again, I know why they did it. But at the same time, it's like, geez, man, you know, which one of these is not like the other? You know,
this was during the period of I think the second attempt at doing Bret Hart as a single star.
The second promise that Vince broke, according to Bret.
Yeah, because he tried after WrestleMania 4, and then they tried in late 89 before it finally stuck in 91. So, they were determined to get him over, I guess. Aaron?
Oh, and you're right, he does not fit. Like, in that promo, the others are yelling, and Bret, I don't know if you watch him, but he's basically just standing there baring his teeth. Just really weird. He just doesn't make any sense. And then, like, in the promo too, like, they have this weird thing where everyone has like a title. Like, this guy's the mechanic, this guy's the experience, this guy's the power. And I don't remember what Duggan is, but
he's the brains.
Yeah, he's the brains. And when they come to the, we're gonna get there. When they come to the ring, they do this weird choreography with the 2x4s.
Oh yes.
Where they toss them in the air, and I just cannot imagine how long they had to practice that for.
What's great too is that Duggan doesn't end up with a 2x4 at the end, so I'm not sure who screwed up. But
it's Garvin. Garvin drops his.
Okay.
Yeah. No surprise there.
Yeah, big shock.
All right, so we got now we got the first promo for No Holds Barred, the match, the movie. So we see why Brutus is so well protected there. Just, you know, a 30-second nothing thing. So we have the King's Court, which we didn't talk about yet, which was Randy the Macho King Savage, Greg the Hammer Valentine, Dino Bravo, and Earthquake, who's replacing Barry Windham, who left the company because his brother and dad were charged with counterfeiting money, and he was dealing with that. And he was called the Widowmaker at the time. But I think Savage and Windham and Valentine is like the coolest three people on a team ever. Unfortunately, it never really, you know, transitioned. But Jimmy Hart paid a lot of money to get Earthquake into the match, according to Gorilla. So that's very important. And also you have, again, Jimmy Hart and Sherry coming out together at the end, being like the team managers, which I love it every time it happens. So we had the 4x4 doing their board show thingy, which I wanted to talk about, but I'm glad we did.
Sorry, I jumped the gun.
It's very exciting anyway. So we start off here, and Dan, why don't you go ahead and talk about the former King Duggan versus the current King Savage feud.
Well, you know, they needed to give Savage something. You know, it was like he had the title for a year. He loses it at WrestleMania, and, you know, he basically gets kind of put into a program where he has to kind of show an actor the ropes, and, you know, he's basically the work rate champion, you know, facing off against the likes of Hogan and the Barber, and they just needed to give this guy something because he's still big, but they clearly wanted to go with a face champion. And so when you look at it this way, Savage, you know, they elevate the king status, and they change his name. He has the scepter, he has the queen, he has a lot of things to just kind of make that character just seem relevant again, because he's too good of a guy to just sort of bury in the mid card. And you know, Hacksaw was just the type of patsy to kind of pass this over. You know, he's a guy that never usually needs wins, but, you know, he's also the guy that was the exact opposite of what the king should have been about, the regal, the royalty. You know, it was actually kind of a very unique feud. You know, I don't see a situation where Savage and Duggan, they were two experienced guys that were the complete polar opposites. I just love the dynamic of that feud. And you just have like this slobbering beast against this really regal, although very unhinged individual. And I thought it was a good pairing.
Aaron?
Yeah, I agree. I will say this, like, I think anyone in WWE today would kill to be as over as Duggan is. Like,
well, yeah, go ahead.
It's just, it's insane. He puts his thumb up and the building becomes unglued, right? So, and what you said, Dan, about the juxtaposition of the Savage and Randy Savage, I guess, is really quite astute. Like, it's exactly why it works.
Mm. Yeah. There's something to say to never losing. Like, Jim Duggan never lost, and he was super over.
He's something the most protected that. Guy ever.
He really is.
Like, Hogan lost more than Duggan did.
But we'll get to Hogan's protection later on, because it gets out of hand on this. But at this point, I realized that the new Dream Team reunited in this match with Dino Bravo and Greg Valentine. I thought that was neat. They never brought it up, but, you know, new Dream Team. They were cool. But you had the Greg Valentine Ron Garvin feud, which is one of my favorites. These two just beat the shit out of each other. They had great house show matches. They had great match at the Royal Rumble. What do you think about those two, Aaron?
Great matches, as long as they didn't talk. Like, that introduction segment at SummerSlam 89 is one of the most painful things I've ever seen in wrestling. But yeah, true. No, I love how tough they are. I like and dislike this about Garvin. I find he just looks like someone's uncle a little bit. Like he could be part of your family, but you don't want to mess with him because he's hard, you know? Like, but yeah, no, I love the feud. And I love that – see, I love that they're doing feuds with that level of guys.
Oh, yeah.
Like they have a storyline that matters. Like, and it's great, and it gives them both something to do, and it just enhances the whole match.
Oh, completely. Great, great feud. But the first elimination comes when Earthquake just squashes Hercules. any thoughts on Hercules in this match, or he was gone too quickly to really notice anything, Dan?
Well, they needed to give Earthquake someone kind of big to show off his power and his size against, and Hercules was a very imposing when you line him up next to some of the other competitors. Like, he had the physique, he had you know, obviously all the muscles, and there was actually a point in this match where he like basically press slammed Savage like he was, you know, the size of my puppy here. Like, it was just like absolutely, it was like with such ease. So the fact that somebody that strong could then now just be taken out by this behemoth, I mean, it kind of brought me back to that Akeem comment I made earlier. Like, when I found out that it was Earthquake instead of the Widowmaker, I was like, well, all bets are off. There's no chance that Hacksaw's team is going to win this. You know, almost like the following year, like when Undertaker came out and it was quite clear that he was invincible, I was like, well, Dusty Rhodes' team is not going to win this under any circumstances. Well, same thing here. It was like, Earthquake? No, this, oh, well, that's it for Hacksaw's Jim Duggan's team. But yeah, like, you had to put over the Tremors and the Earthquakes, you know, that finisher. And I think Hercules was the right guy to do it against.
I feel Hercules never had shorts that fit him right. They always looked way too small.
Awesome.
That's all I have to add about Hercules.
So
that and his dad is fighting Hogan later.
God. I wanted to mention that Sherry and Jimmy Hart working together as managers is one of the greatest things ever. So that's just a really good thing I noticed on the outside. You have Brett and Duggan teaming up to do one of those old I'm going to stand behind you and you're going to push them and knock over earthquake spots, which Brett and Duggan might be one of the weirdest tag teams I've ever seen. Then we have Greg Valentine. He's using the shin guard. And you have Savage and Garvin going at it, which they had a great feud back in Savage's dad's territory in ICW. They had this awesome cage match. So it was fun kind of seeing them mix it up. Garvin and Valentine beat the shit out of each other with chops. But at this point, that's when Duggan hits the three-point stance, sneaks in to hit the three-point stance on the hammer. So what do you think about this whole sequence here, Aaron?
It was great. Savage is my all-time favorite, guys. So, like, no one in my mind is worthy of being in the ring with him. But, I love the chop sequence. I actually love how smooth Duggan is on that sneak in of the three-point stance. Like, I'm surprised Jesse didn't have another heart attack, like the dusty dropkick on it. But it's just great. It's great. It's fun. It moves fast. Like, there's no rest holds so far. And another thing that's happening in this sequence is every time someone goes in the corner, Dino Bravo gives people karate chops on the head. The weakest looking things I've ever seen.
Oh, you wait. We'll have a comment about that in a minute. we get the Garvin stomp, which friggin' rules. But then Savage is able to – I think he hits the elbow drop on Garvin to pin him. So Garvin's out.
And then he also, like, he does this great little thing where Garvin's trying to get out of the ring and Savage just kicks him in the head
for no reason. Yeah. That's true.
I love it.
So we get a long sequence here where Brett is the face in peril. Before that, let's talk about the Duggan on the outside. Instead of doing karate chops, there's one point where Savage gets tied up in the ropes and Duggan starts punching away, and then he goes for this elbow on the top of his head, and it misses by like 2 feet, and Duggan just walks away. It's like the worst camera angle I've ever seen. Did you guys catch that?
Yes.
I did.
Oh, how bad was that? Anyways. But you had – I just took it as Duggan missed because he's an idiot, and he was just like, well, I guess I'll just walk away. But we have this nice long sequence now where Bret Hart is the face in peril, and you have Bret and Randy Savage going at it. So there was a really, really cool little sequence there. What do you think, Dan?
Well, yeah, and the announcers did a great job of kind of elevating Brett in this match, like kind of like, wow, this is kind of a dream matchup here, you know, very interesting. Between these two guys, their styles fairly similar. They always kind of made Brett Hart out to be, and as he would later become, like a star in waiting versus a guy in Savage who was, you know, again, previously was the champion the year before and, you know, a main event level guy, you know, a guy that was feuding with Hogan the few months earlier and is going to feud with Hogan in a few weeks later with the whole no heart holds barred thing. So to have him in the ring with Savage, you kind of get this little like showcase to see, okay, kid, what can you do against one of the best in the world? And again, if you're going to break up the hearts and you're going to have Brett kind of see what he can do against, you know, kind of iron sharpens iron type of situation, I think it probably was better that he was in there against the likes of Savage than maybe against some guys on, you know, the Hakus and Arn Andersons, the way that Jim Neidhart was in the match later on. I just think if you're going to put him in there and kind of see what he can do against main eventers, have him go up against Savage. Savage was a great guy to work with.
And Savage sold for him and acted afraid of him. Which helped. I mean,
it was great.
Credibility.
I just want to correct myself. It was actually Bravo that pinned Garvin. I don't want to.
Right. With the sidewalk slam.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry. My notes got a little messy there. But what do you guys think of. Because normally in a Survivor Series tag or Survivor Series match, you have a point where it's like, say, 2-on-1 or 3-on-2 or something like that. And that's usually the point where, you know, the hot tag is not making a hot tag. It's they pin the heels so it's even. But here they had a face in peril segment and then a hot tag to Duggan. It was very unique. It wasn't on any of the other matches. What did you think of that one, Aaron?
It's good. I think they really used the match as a showcase for Brett and his selling, which was smart and a really astute thing to do at the time. I enjoyed that. And I do like that it's, like you just said, it's different than what we're used to with the Survivor Series. So for me, that enhances it just that little bit more.
All right, Dan, I got a quote here from Jesse Ventura where he says, when they passed out brains, I don't know where Duggan was.
Well, he obviously had enough of a brain to go into a match wielding a piece of wood with him at all times to kind of get him out of some jams. But, again, that's just part of Jesse. Jesse always had his favorites, and Jesse always had his favorites that he hated. And Duggan was definitely one of those guys. He was golden. Whenever you had a Jesse match with Duggan or Dusty Rhodes or one of those guys that he loved to, like, pick on, It was definitely like one of those situations where you can almost close your eyes and just listen to the match and be as entertained as if you were just watching it. You don't get that today. But today, you almost want to tune out the announcers, and sometimes you have no choice but to because it's so terrible. But at this point, it was something that, oh, did you hear what Jesse said in that last match? Or did you hear what Brain said during that Royal Rumble? Like, you kind of remember some of those lines, and that's one of the memorable things about having Jesse Ventura in the booth.
And you know, the announcers also never sound like they're having the time of their lives. Like today, my goal, it's so funny. Like, there's a dancing dinosaur and they're dancing. Like, that never happened with Jesse. He was like, instead, like, accusing Gorilla of eating a whole pumpkin pie for no reason.
Because he was fat. Bret Hart gets posted, and then that's when Savage hits the elbow and Bret's out of here. So now it's 3-on-1. Duggan tends to fend them off for a little bit, but then Sherry pulls down the ropes and Duggan gets counted out. A whole little great sequence. We have Earthquake, Dino Bravo, and Macho Man all surviving. You have Sherry and Jimmy Hart giving this huge celebration, jumping up and down, screaming and giggling. It's one of the greatest little moments there. In the King's Court, what a great team. Mostly all survives. So let's talk about this match as a whole, Aaron. Anything to add?
Not really. I mean, like, why can't Duggan job to those three guys? Like, the former champion, the strongest man in the world, and the fattest man in the world, he can't job to those three. No, it moved well. The guys in it were great. I think Bret Hart learned how to do the sharpshooter from Ronnie Garvin. But no, it was just great, and it was cool to see the heels win. The only thing I kind of wish they would have done is I wish they would have maybe counted out Hacksaw first and have Brett at the end to make that heel win just a little bit, I don't know, a little stronger off a pin instead of a count out.
Yeah, they do that next year.
Yeah,
basically. But yeah, I think it's a fun match. What do you think, Dan?
Yeah, I think, and of course, history played out this way that Brett didn't go on to become a single star from this show, but I think it probably would have been cool if he got a token elimination thrown in there, perhaps. They really showcased like his face in peril and him selling, and they gave him a few good minutes with Savage, which was fine. If he went on to, you know, compete for the Intercontinental title from here, I could have seen them easily getting that elimination on Valentine, or maybe knocking off Bravo, because Bravo is just sort of a hanger on to Earthquake as we go forward. But you know, you really can't. I mean, that's just picking a nit right there.
Yeah.
I think I agree more with Aaron's point of, you know, if Hacksaw Jim Duggan can't do the job for those three individuals, and we have to have another screwy Duggan finish. You know, that's probably more of an injustice than Brett not getting a pin or a submission in this match.
Yeah, and the timing just wasn't right for Brett's single push. Like, I mean, like, in theory, you're putting him, like, in the Intercontinental division, and the champion's the Warrior, so, like,
yeah. Right.
It's just not the same guy.
He was paired with Perfect on the house shows.
Yeah.
Which were good matches, but didn't really get him anywhere.
Well, it's like he's clearly there to job for Perfect.
Yeah.
Like, and to me, that's obvious.
Yeah. So we're backstage now, and they're going to talk to Dusty Rhodes, but he's with the doctors. So instead, we get a poem with the genius. And I didn't write the whole poem down, but I wrote the ending line because I thought it was great. You people should give thanks. I'm the world's smartest man. I can see you have an awful lot to learn. And then Jesse gives this big ha ha ha, like it was the greatest line ever. any thoughts on Jesse or on Genius's poem there, Dan?
Jesse putting over the genius is almost akin to JBL trying to put over Bo Dallas right now. You know, like where he would say, like Bo Dallas would say even the most stupid or simple of things, and JBL would say something to the effect of, "Oh, it's like hearing the words of Aristotle or something like that." Or you know, if Neil Armstrong is in the building right now, it's so inspirational. It's kind of like that. Like I had no love for the genius whatsoever, but Jesse at least made it somewhat tolerable with some of his comments.
So your 8-year-old self, because I know I was 8 or when did this take place? The 23rd? So I was 8 years old for another day. But we were both 8 years old. So do you have any idea that the genius and Randy Savage were brothers?
Zero.
Me neither.
Zero. It wasn't until, like, you know, you started to get the internet or Wikipedia or that sort of thing where you would read a line and be like, you know, brother of so-and-so, and you'd be like, what? what? Did they ever hang out? Why didn't they talk about this? So, like, when they were on the air, how come he wasn't Savage's manager? Like, all these questions start to rumble, but no, I had no idea going in.
Which is crazy, because I'm like that too, but when you think about it, they look exactly the same.
Yes. there's this great baseball card from when Randy Savage was a baseball player. I think it was at the Cincinnati Reds or something like that. And it basically, on the back of the card, it says he started to get really good when he... What was it? When he learned how to drop his elbow? And it was like, that's the best thing.
Nice.
But we got another No Hold Barred promo, which is good. But then we're going to have the Million Dollar Team, which are in the ring after the end of this promo, so they don't get an introduction. I think this is before the Million Dollar Man music started up, so there was no music for Ted DiBiase, Zeus, and the Powers of Pain. I don't think either, all four of them didn't have any music. So, Million Dollar Team without music, taking on the Hulkamaniacs of Hulk Hogan, Jake the Snake Roberts, and Demolition. So, a question for you. You got Demolition, the most over tag team. Jake the Snake Roberts, one of the most over baby faces. Was Hogan, like, trying to siphon off some heat for himself here, or was he just wanting to look like he had the best partners possible? What do you think, Aaron?
Both. Probably both. Like, it's so weird, because normally, like, Hillbilly Jim's his partner, right? Like, yeah. he doesn't need this, and he doesn't do anything to make them look good in any way. So it's like, look, I survived longer than the tag champs and Roberts. I mean, we're going to get more into the booking of this match, I'm sure. and it's funny, because, like, when they come out, they each get their own intro, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the Hogan pop is not – I don't know if it's even – I'm sure it's bigger than both, but not by the margin you would expect. Like, well, they feel a bit more even than they should be.
Yeah, well, he's with some of the most popular acts in the company, so it's not like he had Red Rooster come out before him.
Right. No way Rooster would get me. He'd just come out to Real American.
They should have really just replaced Jake Roberts and Demolition with the the Rooster, Tito Santana, and Bruce Beefcake.
Yeah. Well, it's strange that Beefcake's not on the team.
Yeah. Against Zeus, of all people.
Yeah.
Right? It's weird that they kept the people from the match from No Holds Barred all in different matches, except for Zeus and Hogan.
And I could be wrong, but is there ever any sort of explanation as to why Zeus is listening to Ted DiBiase now?
Money.
Aside from him just doing that hand gesture?
That's it. Just the money. But we start off here, and the Million Dollar Team's in the ring, and they're playing King of the Mountain spots until Jake pulls out Damien, which clears house. So we get Zeus and Hogan. Talk about Zeus and Hogan, Dan.
Well, I see what they were going for, obviously. They were really hyping up the movie, obviously, during the summer. And they wanted to keep that going into this event. And, of course, because this event, almost like what we would see in 91, this event was a commercial for something else. You know, everybody was almost after every match, you would get this, you know, this no holds barred themed pay-per-view, which was centered around, hey, let's get a few extra bucks from pay-per-view purchases of this movie. And we'll throw a match in there as well. So they wanted to keep that going, but I don't think they wanted to do three straight shows with Hogan, Savage, Beefcake, and Zeus. So I think that explains the split. But at the same time, you have Hogan and Zeus here, and I was never one to necessarily believe that we'd ever see a one-on-one encounter between these two. There's only so much you could do with a guy who's seemingly impervious to pain versus Hulk Hogan. And this match kind of bared that out. It was like, well, we got our few minutes of it. Zeus looked like a monster. Hey, buy this pay-per-view. And then it was over. So it was kind of cheesy, you know. It definitely at the time, and definitely looking back, was very much a letdown, because I didn't necessarily put much stock in they're going to keep this going until WrestleMania. So it would have been nice if we had real closure. But once you started seeing those commercials for No Holds Barred, the match, and the movie, you knew that this puppy was going to be going for a lot longer. So the cheap, cheesy, quick disqualification, Hogan looking like a tool, not very satisfying, but it made sense based on what they were doing marketing this pay-per-view.
Two questions about Hogan Zeus. One, has Zeus just lost his mind? Because, like, Hogan's not coming out as Rip, right? Like, he's a character from the movie who stepped into real life.
So, I'll answer that, because...
Yeah, please.
Zeus was, I guess, this crazy person. And I think they portrayed it as Hogan really, like, Zeus didn't like getting beat up by Hogan on the set. And he was so crazy and delusional that he was going to come and get his revenge on Hogan for making him look bad in the movie. I think maybe Zeus was this crazy monster they picked off the street and just put him in a movie. I'm not sure.
But then don't call him Tiny Lister in the credits of No Holds Barred. Like, why does the Million Dollar Team want Zeus to stop choking Hogan?
Yeah, why is he offering him money to stop?
Yeah, just choke him till he's dead. Like, that's the only way you're gonna pin him is if he's fucking dead.
It's true. Yeah, that was a little odd. But we transition into Hulk Hogan versus Ted DiBiase, which has been a feud that's been dead for a year, but they're bringing it back for this little part of the match. What do you think about this one, Dan?
Just very strange. It was almost like, well, we need to do something with DiBiase. He
was feuding with Jake.
Yeah,
so it was weird.
It was weird that the team captain of one team was kind of having a feud with the kind of secondary or second in command guy on the opposing team. So that made it kind of fascinating. I mean, if they really wanted to put over Zeus and Hogan, they might as well have had Zeus be the leader of the team. But Zeus was kind of like this android, unbeatable, impervious to pain monster that it just seemed kind of unbelievable that he would be the one that would be the leader of a team of sane individuals. But it was kind of cheap. I mean, you did later on get, you know, Million Dollar Man getting one over on Jake, and Jake got the pop for giving a DDT to Virgil. I almost called him Vincent there. I mean, really, he's only in this match to further the Jake stuff, and it just so happened as an awful side effect, he also had to do the job for Hulk Hogan again, which no one needed that, because he had been doing that for quite a bit already. But you know, that was the nature of the beast. We all wanted to see the red and yellow successful in posing at the end back in the late 80s.
Yeah, and speaking of dead feuds that were long gone. Demolition and Powers of Pain, completely over in March or April, and brought back here for this match. And I guess the first elimination here is Axe getting pinned after Fuji trips him up. What do you think about pairing these teams up again?
Well, it's weird because they put the powers of pain over for some reason.
Yeah, because Smash gets pinned next by the war by the barbarian.
Yeah, like they're the only guys aside from DiBiase that get pinned, or like, or they're, I find it's like completely kind of clean how it's weird. It's weird that the powers of pain goes over Demolition so smoothly here, and then we never hear from them again.
Speaking of never hearing from them again, this is the part of the match that is very, very strange. So I'll let you guys both talk about this. But the Powers of Pain, they get a spike pile driver on Hulk Hogan, and then they are continuing to beat him up, and they both get disqualified. So three out of the four members of the Million Dollar Team get disqualified by beating up Hogan. Dan, your 8-year-old self, what did you think of this?
Well, at first if you're talking about my 8-year-old self, I was probably scared that Hulk Hogan was paralyzed from the neck down after such a devastating maneuver. But after I got that, and then probably the 8-year-old self was probably happy. I was probably saying to himself, oh, now Hogan's up 2-1. But now looking back with a little bit more insight and intelligence to this sort of thing, it was kind of like that, you know, Powers of Pain, again, never really amounted to much after this. I mean, they basically got split up and sold off and did a singles run that really went to nowhere. So really, having them beat Demolition so convincingly was pretty odd, given the fact that Demolition had just won the titles back and were kind of feuding with the Brainbusters, and then eventually down the road we'd see what they would end up doing. But with that said, That's one questionable decision. But then to have them basically go out, I mean, you could have had any situation. You could have had Warlord kind of trip into a DDT and he could have been eliminated. You could have had, you know, the leg drop and that sort of thing to the Barbarian. There were so many better ways that you could have eliminated those two guys that weren't going anywhere anyway. But to basically, you know, they murder Hulk Hogan and then get disqualified. Like, it didn't really serve anything except for, well, we need quick eliminations. Let's get them out of here. Two for one special right here, right now.
Well, and one of them's a legal man. Like, why is he disqualified? And number two, you have the guy on the other team who's got the most over finisher in the company.
Right.
Can't hit one of them with a DDT or both of them?
Jake gets his DDT on Virgil. At this point, because Virgil runs down. But then Ted just, I guess, what, Jake gets tripped and Ted just drops a fist on him and he gets pinned? Is that what happens?
He puts his feet on the ropes, too.
He puts his feet on the ropes. Okay. So he cheats there. So we're down to Hogan and DiBiase, and Hogan's still out. And, yeah, you know exactly what happens here. So how does this – like, where does this rank on the Hulk Hogan is paying off the referees thing that ran throughout the late 80s in the WWF, Dan?
Well, I take some contention with kind of the smart fans who talk about how, well, it would have killed them to put over Ted DiBiase, and why did DiBiase have to do the job, and, you know, did Hogan really need this? And no, Hogan probably didn't need this, but you got to think about it in terms of 1989 terms, in which, you know, the fans all wanted to see their red and yellow. They all wanted to see him do the pose. There was no way back in this day that the World Wrestling Federation champion was going to lose to a mid-card guy who really wasn't, I mean, he's a big name, but he wasn't being portrayed as a real threat to the title at this point. There's no way that the World Wrestling Federation champion on Thanksgiving night is going to lose to the hated, villainous, but right now kind of in the middle of the road million-dollar man Ted DiBiase. It just was not going to happen. Now, whether or not he should have won, that's a different discussion altogether. But this was pretty lame, though, if you think about it as far as the Survivor Series match. You have one guy get disqualified a couple minutes in for beating up Hogan. You get a tag team that, for excessive, I guess, double-teaming, gets disqualified. And so basically three-quarters of that team was eliminated in not the more traditional, you know, ways. And then, then basically at the end, the conquering hero, the superhero, ends up victorious. There's probably a million better ways you could have done this.
Aaron?
Yeah, you know, I don't disagree with that. Like, I mean, I'm not of the mind that DiBiase should have won. I just think there's probably a way they could have gone about it where someone could have looked good also with Hogan. Like, maybe Jake puts out one of the two or both of the Powers of Pain guys. Like, it's just, it's for me, it's not about the result in this one. It's more about just execution. And also, the match itself, while it was good, like, I found every time DiBiase got in there, he went to rest holds, which is strange when you've got, like, four guys standing on the apron as well. Like, I just found it a slow kind of plodding match for what it was. And, and if you're going to put over anyone, like, if you're going to put over one of the heels, why don't you put over Zeus? Like, not that I want him to win, but, like, instead of you're right about DiBiase. He's nothing at this point. Like, he's nothing except an asshole that you hate, right? But he's not a threat. He made his own belt. Like, he's nothing.
Right. The way I look at it, the whole Zeus thing is, would it have been believable, or would it have been watchable to have a guy like Zeus in there for 27 minutes? You know, I don't know if this would have gone a half hour if Zeus was basically, you know, in the fold the entire time. He would probably just be out on the apron for a while, come in, murder Demolition after Hogan got taken out by somebody else, and then you have him win. And then it does make for an interesting dynamic, because then you're like, well, did you just see what Zeus did at Survivor Series? There's no way in a cage he's going to get beaten against, you know, a wounded Hulk Hogan and a wounded you know, Beefcake. Like, you know, maybe it would have created some intrigue, but I just go back to my original point of, it's Thanksgiving night, where a bunch of 8, 9, and 10-year-olds are watching this, and we're not going to see our hero lose to the villainous Zeus. I mean, whether you agree with that or not, that's another
discussion. Only thing I guess they could have done is if they had, like, Hogan and Zeus double counted out, and then maybe end the match with Jake hitting the DDT on DiBiase, and send them home happy that way.
Oh, sure.
No, they don't want to do that for Jake.
Yeah, of course.
That's stupid. Did anybody else notice how much he hit Damien, too?
Yeah, I was curious, like, about that, too. It just
beats the shit out of his snake.
Well, the snake might have been, like, asleep. He was probably waking up.
He's probably been in the trunk of a car for, like, the 4 hours right there.
So, you know, weirdest booking ever, but we move on, and we got Savage and Zeus giving us a little promo backstage that's amazing. Is there anything you want to say about that one, Dan?
Oh, I could listen to Savage promos all day. I really could. Like, I don't even know if I'll understand what he's saying. I just love, like, the cadence of his voice, the speech, and his voice, and, you know, and then Sherry being absolutely bananas. And I love the Zeus has been chosen by the scepter. And every time you have Zeus on the forehead, you know, Zeus, like, wigs out. It's just magic. If you haven't had an opportunity, I know some people will, like, watch these and might not necessarily pay attention to the promos, but around this time period, the promos are just as watchable and as entertaining as the matches in most cases.
Yeah, fun stuff. And then we have Hogan and Brutus giving a promo, which leads to Zeus and Savage running in and attacking them. Any thoughts on that one, Aaron?
Number one, Brutus has changed tights, which is strange. But no, it's a great little beatdown, and I think it was kind of needed because they were separated in the matches. And I'm always good for Savage beating up Beefcake. I'll pay any amount of money to see him hurt him.
So I think we get another No Holds Barred trailer, but I don't think I wrote it down. But then we go to intermission. So at this point, we'll go to intermission on our show as well, and we'll be right back to talk about the final two matches. We'll be right back.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
This is the king of old school, Steve Corino, and you've heard all the rumors, and it's true. The Steve Corino Show is here. We talk about wrestling. We talk about baseball, movies, television, anything you want to talk about. New guest every week. That's right. The Steve Corino Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
Hey, this is Bauer from The Bauer Show, sports and more. You can check out The Bauer Show podcast every Wednesday and Friday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
The Bauer Show.
Chad, do you hate it when commercials run and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on PlaceToBeNation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Greetings, friends. Ben Morse from Place to Be Nation's Main Event here. Tired of other podcasts constantly stuck in the past? Every other week, we give you a roundtable discussion of what's happening in wrestling today. Place to Be Nation's Main Event. We're holding everybody else down.
Looking for something different in your pro wrestling podcasts? Look no further than the Pro Wrestling Super Show. Join me, Stephen Graham, every week as I'm joined by a rotating door of guests as we discuss a single topic each show, ranging from ECW pay-per-view reviews, wrestler snapshots, top six lists, and anything else you can think of. That's the Pro Wrestling Super Show every week here on the Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds terrible. The Titans of Wrestling... Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans of Wrestling are...
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for a show at Breakdown Matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Bob, we watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling.
You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week, join Marcus Vandenberg and myself for the world's most dangerous sports show and the program that's changing the game one show at a time, the Kings of Sport Podcast. Available exclusively on PlaceToBeNation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
Hey, sports fans, this is Dr. G for Extra Point, Place to Be Nation's traditional sports talk podcast. Every episode, Scott Criscullo and I talk everything from the Big Four leagues to all the hot sports news with exclusive guests and analysts. Email us your comments and questions at extrapoint@placetobenation.com. That's the Extra Point, exclusively on placetobenation.com.
Hey, sports fans, Cowboy here. Make sure you make your weekly stop by the Sports Lounge here on placetobenation.com, where the boys and I tackle all the hot topics in the world of sports. We go behind the numbers and provide in-depth expert analysis on Major League Baseball, MMA, NFL, and more. The seats fill up quick, so grab your favorite cigar, kick back, and join us in the Sports Lounge, only on placetobenation.com.
In Rhode Island and looking for great food and a fun atmosphere, we'll be sure to stop by Bonehead's Wing Bar, 131 Washington Street in West Warwick, with over 65 different wing sauces and dozens of sandwiches, burgers, and appetizers. In a fully stocked bar, Bonehead's has something for everyone. Boneheads also shows every WWE and UFC pay-per-view, features live music, weekly trivia, and much, much more. So, be sure to stop in, tell Matt and the crew that Place to Be Nation sent you, and become a Bonehead today.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast, exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
What's up, wrestling fans? This is Jeff Peck, and you can check out my wrestling podcast, The Still Real to Us Show, every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com. It is a wrestling podcast from a fan's perspective, and we're not doing it in our mom's basement. So check it out every Saturday right here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
It's still real to me, damn it!
Looking for new wrestling, sports, and pop culture voices? Head over to PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. We have an extremely talented staff that covers comics, video games, and all facets of entertainment. Our sports coverage spans all the major professional and collegiate sports, including MMA. Our fresh takes on professional wrestling are some of the best on the internet. Also, be sure to check out our friends at thehistoryofwwe.com, prowrestlingonly.com, Scott Keith blog at rspwfaq.net, and piledriverwrestling.net.
And we're back, and I'm here with Dan McGinn and Aaron George, and we're talking Survivor Series 89, a really fun show up to this point. And the show itself on pay-per-view just had their five-minute intermission. We just had our intermission, and we're back. And Jesse Ventura wants to inform us that he has got some inside information that there has been some trouble with the Heenan family, including some pushing and shoving. Do you think that will go anywhere, Aaron?
No.
No, okay.
No.
Me neither.
No. It was stupid to even bring it up for Jesse.
He's going to have some egg on his face later, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Well, truth be told, there was supposed to be another American on this panel, but there was some pushing and shoving prior to us starting this pay-per-view, and, well, it's just the three of us, so don't know. There might. We can't question the legitimacy of pushing and shoving.
No.
Do you remember when Canadians burnt down the Pink House and then they rebuilt it as the White House? Because that was interesting.
That's a good part of history, I think.
I don't think Americans know about that part of history. But we can move on.
We're not all just beavers and snow up here, right?
So we have Jesse telling us about the pushing and shoving. And then we have Rude Brood's promo. Rick Rude's team, which is one of the coolest four-man teams I've ever seen, of Rick Rude, Mr. Perfect, and the fabulous Rougeau brothers. And Rick Rude's got these amazing tights where his team is on the front with like these heavenly clouds, and then on the back it says rest in peace with a tombstone, and it has all his opponents. Just absolutely amazing. What did you make of this promo, Aaron?
It's my favorite Survivor Series team of all time, probably. But it's awesome, and he has a better promo, a poem than the genius.
Can you remember it?
I have the second part. The first part is something something that the tights will tell you. Will avail. Which team will perish and which will prevail? Which I love. it's great. Great promo, and like, there's something so legitimate about Perfect and Rude together on a team, because like, and especially if you know anything about them too, like it's the two Minnesota guys, and they have the two loudmouth French guys, which are just great assholes. So the promo's great, and Rude's tights are legendary.
Yeah. And then we have another legendary promo, which is Rowdy's Roddies, which is we have Roddy Piper, Jimmy Snuka, and the Bushwhackers. They're coming down a flight of stairs. The Bushwhackers have turkey stuffed in their tights. Piper's trying to keep everyone calm. Snook is just like, I don't know what he's doing. What do you think of this thing, Dan?
Well, it was the perfect setting for this team, if you think about it. I mean, you look at some of the other, actually, if you just look at the Rude's Brood interview, you had that kind of canopy with the logo and the, you know, nice background, and everything's so peaceful and tranquil. And then you get to the Rowdy's promo, and it's just like this back hallway with stairs, and you know, it's not very well lit, and it just worked for the characters involved. This one really was the, oh gosh, these guys definitely hang out together all the time, and you know, it was you legitimately could have foreseen them sitting down, having a whole turkey dinner, and then, oh, it's time for that interview, and then we have to go out to our match now, guys. Let's go. And it was just, it was so brilliant in its chaos. It was, you know, the Bushwhackers are loud and obnoxious, and just, you know, and then you have Snuka, who's hooting and hollering, and Piper's the ringleader of this circus. I mean, there was just so much awesome. You know, a lot of people point to the heels as being like probably the best group team, but for very different reasons, this foursome was, I couldn't think of anybody else being in any of those spots. Like, it would not make sense if the Rockers were on this match, or if somebody like, yeah, exactly, if Bret Hart was with, and Bret Hart and Piper have a good relationship, but if Bret Hart was on this team, it just would not work. But it just that the whole, you know, they're just so crazy. They're savages all just together, and it was brilliant. It was brilliant, at like contrast of styles between these two teams.
And I think in 1983, so if they went back in time like 6 years ago, this would have been the greatest heel team of all time. Like, Snuka was this amazing heel. Piper, the Sheepherders, they would have been just scary. You wouldn't want to see them together. It would have been too amazing. But sadly, we're in 1989, and they're all baby faces, and it's very interesting to watch.
Piper has to work in like a dated reference to every promo. Dem bones, dry bones.
I don't know what the hell that is.
Every promo, there's something. Like, he's talking about Jacques Cousteau or something we don't care about anymore.
We get this match now, and there's no Bobby Heenan on Rick Rude's corner. I don't think that will go anywhere, but I guess we'll find out.
No, stupid.
So we get the start. We got the contrast of teams that Dan was talking about here. And the match starts out with every single member of Roddy's biting Mr. Perfect. And, like, even Roddy Piper, like, they take turns. And when Snuka comes in, Gorilla mentions that there is someone who really knows how to bite. and then Jesse mentions that he's three steps away from carnival, from being a cannibal.
That's exactly right.
Just insanity. But another point about Gorilla and Jesse just being absolutely on fire tonight.
They also get a line when they're walking to the ring where the Perfect is the genius is walking behind Perfect. And Gorilla says, "I don't like the idea of the genius walking behind me, Jess."
I forgot about that one.
Yeah, that's great. So, strangely enough, the Superfly Splash pins Jacques, like, right away. And then Roddy Piper hits this weird, like, jumping, hip-swiveling pile driver on Raymond Rougeau. And we have the Rougeau brothers out in the first 7 minutes of this match. So, did they make any contribution to this one at all, Aaron?
Well, obviously, I'm very disappointed that they're out. they're like our city's hero when it comes to wrestling. But I'd say the contribution that Jacques made was the insane amount of prancing he did. He flipped in the ring. He strutted a lot. There was also a lot of smiling and a lot of brotherly hugging, which I feel was a big part of the success of the match.
So, Dan, Rick Rude and Roddy Piper were having a hell of a little feud in 89. They had this amazing cage match, if no one's ever seen it, from MSG. But what do you think about the Rude-Piper interaction in this match?
Fantastic, but not enough of it. You know, like, you got, like, a taste. You got a little bit in the ring, and, of course, they fought out to, you know, a double count out. But I would have I personally would have liked to have seen more. With the team jumping out to a 4-2 lead at the time, I was thinking to myself, wow, I mean, this was not one of the matches that I thought the good guys would go over. So what made this match very unique was for half the match you felt pretty good, and then there was the comeback at the end. But I know they probably did have other plans, and I have seen that cage match. It is terrific. I correct me if I'm wrong, is that before or after this?
I think it's December, so it must be after.
Okay, because I think I have heard that a lot of people point to that cage match as the you know, that was basically their blow-off. So, because that's what they tended to do back then. But I would have liked to have seen more of Piper and Rude in this match, honestly. But it was mainly a showcase for Mr. Perfect, if you look back at it. And Mr. Perfect's there at the end. He's not the captain, but basically has to assume that role when Rude, you know, gets counted out. And it was a nice little showcase match between he and Snuka. I know he, like, Snuka, they had pretty good chemistry in there. Snuka would do right by Mr. Perfing and making him look good, and you saw that in this match. But as far as the Piper Rude stuff was always very entertaining, even on television when they were just talking, you knew it was going to be good stuff.
But before we get to some of those eliminations, we had the exact same thing happened to the Bushwhackers, as Rude just rolls up Butch, and then he does a Rude Awakening on Luke to get rid of them. And at this point, before Rude and Piper got counted out together, Rude and Perfect were doing all these tag team, basically a tag match, and Rude and Perfect became this really cool tag team that I don't think I ever saw team up again, but I really wish I saw more of them. What do you think, Aaron?
Yeah, you know what I call Rude eliminating both Bushwhackers?
What?
Justice. But no, you're right. They were great, and I love how Jesse kept talking about, see, they're doing it with wrestling. He's like really harping, like he like you were talking before about the guys he hated. He always hated the Bushwhackers, like, with a passion. But yeah, no, it was great, and it was great to see them together. And it just kept making me reminisce for when they were together. The only other time I remember them together was in WCW.
Yeah,
he was managing him, and I just think they're a great fit.
Yeah. So we had – it's actually Perfect that pinned which one? He pinned Butch. Sorry. My writing's a little messy here. But, you know, same result. Great tag team. And then we have they were both counted out, and we had that showcase that Dan was talking about where Perfect gets the Perfect Plex on Snuka. And for some reason, after Snuka attacks the Genius, And then he goes for the super size splash, but I think Perfect saves him, right?
Yeah.
And then they just go to the back, and that was the end. But Mr. Perfect, sole survivor, you know, continues to be a perfect at Survivor Series, so good for him.
Great near falls, too, in the Perfect Snuka stuff.
Oh, yeah.
With a lot of pin attempts, and it was a nice little match.
Yeah, and that was kind of a staple of that time period. It's if a good guy lost to a fellow who also had a manager, it was kind of like the thing. Well, I know I just lost, but and I know I'm the hero here, but and I'm the bigger man, but I'm going to take out the weaker guy instead, you know, because I can't beat you, you know. So that was kind of the feeling there, was I'm going to do it. Let me do a splash on the defenseless genius instead. But the one thing I do like, and I know we're probably going to get to it anyway, there was a promo like immediately after this match where Rick Rude looks hammered and the Rougeos are celebrating and Perfect. And it just really drove home the point that this was a team. This wasn't just a group of individuals that were just because of convenience or a decision made by a booker, we're four guys that just happen to be on the same team. This actually looked like a cohesive unit that really cared about winning and losing and cared about each other. Like, there was no reason for the Rougeos to hang out after their quick elimination, but here they are, like, celebrating. You didn't see champagne, but you could pretty much assume, based on Rude's behavior, that they were just in the back crushing bottles and cheering on their guy in victory. I mean, it was amazing. But again, you don't see that anymore. You just get Team Cena, you get Team Ambrose. No, you know, you would actually see guys kind of supporting one another. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, like, yeah. Legitimately happy for Perfect.
Yeah, good job. But Sean Mooney, he asks Rick Rude about Heenan, but we don't get a comment, so probably nothing up.
Shut up, Mooney.
Exactly.
Why is Mooney ruining their party?
Who knows? But next up, we get one of the greatest promos of all time. We have The Ultimate Warrior with Jim Neidhart and the Rockers. And Neidhart and Rockers were being themselves. Warrior was just kind of pacing around. One point, Neidhart's doing his promo, and the Warrior's just tugging on his beard. And then he's taking his glasses and flicking them up and down for some reason, his sunglasses. I don't know why. And then in the end, when Warrior starts doing his speak, he has Shawn Michaels and Jim Neidhart in, like, chokeholds, holding them up over his shoulders like he's flexing, and their arms are on his bicep, like, their heads are on his bicep in a very weird pose as he finishes off his promo. So just, is this the most amazing thing ever, Aaron?
yes it is. He's number one, he says he's bonded these men in darkness. So I don't know what that means, but it sounds serious. I love when he starts a promo too with his back to the camera. Like there's just no rules with this guy. Like it's just anything, any craziness. Like the rest are trying to, he must make everyone nervous. Like, they're all trying to do a serious interview, and he's just walking back and forth.
I love the flipping up and down of the glasses. Like, that's my favorite part.
And I gotta believe he never told him he was gonna do that.
Oh, guaranteed.
Yeah. And, like, Jim Neidhart's used to being the crazy one in the promos.
Yeah, and he seems sane. Dan, anything to add to this one?
I think it's a good team as far as, like, of course these guys would all be paired together, like the Rockers, Warrior, you know, the unhinged Jim Neidhart. But yeah, you're right. Jim Neidhart almost seems, you know, kind of tranquil, kind of calm and mellow compared to that of the Warrior. Pretty good little team. And again, kind of back to the point about promos, you got to watch these guys. They just knew what they were doing. They probably weren't operating off of a script. It was just really, really fun stuff.
I forgot.
There's no way they were operating off of a script.
Warrior mentions that they all brought their donor cards too. I remember that line, which is just amazing. But we come back from that promo, and the Heenan family is in the ring. There's no Tully Blanchard, who failed the drug test and was fired. But Bobby Heenan's in his wrestling attire. And this starts, I think, the greatest announcing job in the history of wrestling, where Gorilla and Jesse just argue nonstop about how Gorilla thinks that this match has now become a 4-on-3 match. And Jesse spends the entire match cheering for Bobby to get the win so that he can prove Gorilla wrong. And it's just, throughout the whole match, just absolutely amazing. I hope I wrote down some more quotes throughout, but we'll see. But we have that great stuff within the ring. What do you think about not only that, Heenan replacing him and Gorilla and Jesse, but any thoughts about the Intercontinental Champion being in the main event as opposed to the World Champion, Aaron?
I think it was – I'd like to think they were probably using it as a test to see if he could kind of cut it, like as a precursor to WrestleMania. But it's funny, like the difference between the two right now – And I actually think it's not that great. And I think this is probably the highest prestige the Intercontinental title ever has, like, because of who holds it. I think he's almost on par with Hogan, so I don't think it's crazy. And the heel side, to me, is – even though Heenan's in there, the heel side are kind of the bigger monster heels of the 80s a little more with Andre in there. So I think it was fine and it fit well.
Dan?
For sure. I mean, it's you look at this match, and if you look at it as Warrior kind of as the next in line behind Hogan against and who's the guy that you need to get through to get to Hogan? Well, it's probably going to be Andre the Giant, even though he was getting a little bit up there in age. So, you know, the Heenan family was feuding with, you know, trying to get the Intercontinental title, and you know, Heenan's trying to, like, add another notch on his belt. He just recently had the tag team champions just before this, you know, the month prior. So it makes sense in the long run that, you know, you would have to take down the Giant before you'd go on to potentially challenge for the heavyweight title. So in that regard, it's totally understandable. This match loses a little bit of luster, in my opinion, anyway, because it definitely would have been better if the Brainbusters were intact. You look at it.
I will disagree with that.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, because it's you're right in terms of quality, but you immediately start thinking, oh, he's gonna beat the shit out of Heenan.
Oh sure. Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. But I always just kind of felt like, when Heenan was in there, I mean, it was funny, don't get me wrong, and him getting an elimination in this match was quite was humorous, but it almost was like a foregone conclusion. I didn't feel like the Brain was in any way going to be a threat to the face team whatsoever, and but we'll see what happens. But yeah, and then particularly when you consider what happened to Andre right away in this match, it was like, oh gosh, well now it's even more of a foregone conclusion what the result's going to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Ray Stevens is considered by many one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. Nick Bockwinkel, I've seen the footage, is one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. And they were this amazing tag team that everyone talks about as one of the best tag teams of the late 70s, early 80s. And Bobby Heenan was their manager. And there'd be often nights where one of the two would sub out and Heenan would sub in. And Nick Bockwinkel always points out that they never missed a beat at all. Like, Heenan was just as great in that role. Like, you can see later on with his bumps, and you could definitely, like, his charisma and everything was insane. Like, he was getting really old at this point, but and also the storyline, I think that adding Heenan really helps the match, but we'll argue that after. Let's get to the match here. So we have the Heenan family brawling with the Warriors before we start, before even the Warrior gets out there, and the Warrior comes down without the music. He goes after Andre. The bell rings to start the match. Warrior clotheslines Andre over the top. Andre gets counted out because he can't get up in the first 27 seconds of the match. Was this the best way to start this match? Like, could there have been a better way? Aaron?
I don't think so. And I think a big credit goes, you're right about the announcing. The announcers sell that moment and make that moment make sense to us at home by harping like, oh, he was in the ring when the bell rang and stuff like that. And I mean, what are you really going to do with Andre in the rest of the match? You know, like it's fine and it's good and it gets everything started like with energy, which is kind of what it needed.
Dan?
Yeah, it was a huge moment, and of course when we were actually able to look at things like, you know, house shows and stuff, you knew that Andre was losing matches rather quickly against the Warrior, probably in an effort to make him look like he was larger than life and he was the next big thing. And so no, it does make...
I know the story behind it. He was losing to Warrior really quickly because he hated the Warrior and didn't want to wrestle him.
Well, yeah. But it makes sense that he would then go out very early in a Survivor Series match as well. But yeah, exactly. It was probably, unless Andre was going to just murder the rest of the team and then Warrior would have like a heroic comeback victory, there was probably no other role for Andre except to do the quick job like he was doing on the house show circuit.
Yeah, so we go a little bit, a couple more minutes, and then Haku hits one of those big kicks and pins the anvil, which makes it 3-on-3, or as Gorilla said, it's now 3-on-2 for the faces. So Anvil kind of the weak link here, and they just kind of took him out early. Any thoughts about Anvil here, Aaron?
He's fodder.
Yeah, like pretty much.
He's just fodder. I love the kick, the way Haku kicks him in the back of the head, though.
Oh yeah,
like on that. And I love Haku's kicks, but yeah, I mean, if everyone, he was kind of the most out of place. Like at least the Rockers were a team, right?
Yeah. So we're moving on here, and we have Warrior on the apron being just amazing, and we basically have a Rockers, Haku, and Arn tag match, which. I thought Haku and Arn made this amazing tag team. You always talk about Arn Anderson being one of the best tag wrestlers of all time. But him and Haku, they just had this... I think they had this chemistry that I wish they could have expanded upon in the future. But I thought they were really great here. Any thoughts on the Haku-Arn versus Rockers little segment there, Dan?
Well, yeah, and they almost had to be great in this match because they basically were carrying the ball for the Heathen family. Yeah, Andre was gone. You had Bobby doing his Bobby thing. I think some of the best stuff was like they would tag in Bobby. He'd take a punch to the gut, and then he'd make a quick tag back. I was like, they really had to be the war horses in this. It was like sink or swim. We're going down with you two guys. And I thought it was a great showcase. You know, Haku gets the elimination on Neidhart. Later on, you would see Arn Anderson get a pin and it, with his finisher, and for those that thought that maybe Arn was maybe kind of half-assing it because, you know, Tully wasn't there and he was on his way out too, I think
he
that's
was
ludic-
not no
no I don't no. know I think it was I think that's a ludicrous thing assumption to make because I mean they worked their asses off in this match.
Oh yeah. Yeah, you got the great Heenan segment there, and then after a little bit of damage, the Arn and Haku lay out Marty Jannetty. Heenan wants to tag. He comes in and he pins Marty Jannetty, which proves to Jesse that he's an integral part of the team. Gorilla's still not convinced. But Heenan here was great. The announcing was great. How is this going for you, Aaron?
It's great. Like, I love the Heenan in and out. I did find it weird to see Arn Anderson well lit. Like, I'm used to seeing him in WCW where I can barely see him, but no, it's good. And I love the point about Haku and Anderson. Like, it's funny, every time, I mean, even later on, both of those guys are part of such awesome, memorable teams. And it really is cool to see them work together. But yeah, no, I find that the Weasel Heenan character just adds to any match he's in.
Oh, yeah. And then going on, we have Shawn Michaels pinning Haku. Dan?
Yeah, well, I don't think they were talking in terms of Shawn becoming a singles guy yet, but I know Shawn's always kind of had a desire to eventually break out and on his own, and this was a good thing for, maybe we said this about Brett earlier, but maybe this was kind of a, if they weren't thinking about it, they might have been thinking about it once this event happened. Brett, you know, Marty gets eliminated. Sean's on his own. He's, you know, standing, you know, arm in arm with the Intercontinental Champion, and you know, he's selling well. He gets a pin. He, you know, looks good in a kind of supporting role here. I don't think when we were watching this in '89, we thought this guy will one day become the showstopper, the main event, all that good stuff. But you looking back on it, maybe this was one of those things that the suits took a look at and said, hey, this we might have something else on our hands here. I know we were kind of thinking about Brett as a future cornerstone to the company, but you know, Sean looked really good in a kind of a lesser role in this pay-per-view.
Were you digging the Warrior Sean tag team action, Aaron?
Yep. For me, like, about them breaking out too, it's all about context, right? Like, it's hard to view Michaels as a single star next to the Warrior in that time period, because he's just nowhere near as larger than life. But like, the fan in me looking back now, it's like, what a cool team.
Yeah. Right? At one point, like, they hit a rocket launcher.
Yeah, that's right. And I just kept thinking, like, oh man, the international incident could have been so good if Warrior didn't know show.
Aw.
True.
Aw.
And another part about Warrior as the tag is I love him he's in perpetual motion throughout the match. It must be so hard to throw anybody into the ropes.
So at this point, Arn and Heenan have a little bit of an argument because Heenan won't tag in. At one point, Sean goes to the outside and Heenan climbs the top rope like he's going to do a dive off the top rope to the floor, but then just climbs down the other side. And like Gorilla's saying, he just couldn't find a comfortable spot to stand, which is really great. But from there, you have Arn Anderson hitting his great spine buster on Shawn Michaels, and Shawn's out. A really good performance there. But we're down to Arn and Bobby versus the Warrior. So 2-on-1 or 1-on-1, I guess, depending on which announcer you're listening to. What do you think about we're heading into that final segment here. Dan, what any thoughts going into this part?
At this point, I was pretty much, obviously, I think I was already pretty much convinced that Warrior was going to win this, but the question would be is, like, how much style points would there be? You know, would he just immediately murder Arn Anderson, or would there be a little bit of a nice battle between the two? And then I just never expected there to be any other situation once this match was set up the way it was. I didn't think there was any possible way that it would be anybody else but Brain versus Warrior at the very end, you know. And it just played out so well, because obviously Arn gets pinned, Arn takes a walk, you know, because he has to. As Jesse said, once you're eliminated, you've got to get out of the building. So Arn was following suit, doing what he needed to do, and just the image. There's so many great images in this match.
There's a key point there where Arn gets whipped into the side and Bobby gets knocked down. So then when Arn gets pinned by the Warrior, by the time Heenan gets up, Arn's halfway gone. So Heenan just gets up on the turnbuckle there and starts yelling at Arn, like, come back here, like, what are you doing? And then he turns around and realizes he has to face one-on-one with the Warrior, and the look on his face is just absolutely amazing. What do you think about that part, Aaron?
It's perfect. It's absolutely perfect, and what should have happened. What Dan was saying was right too, is that as soon as you see the way the match is going down, it has to go there. But that was the magic of Heenan, to be able to sell that moment that well.
Oh yeah, and there's another quick little awesome segment where when Heenan gets up on the apron when Arn's gone, Warrior kind of sneaks out so he's not seen. And then he gets in the ring to surprise Heenan. Like, does this great little sneak out of the ring.
Man, Warrior's face paint's basically been wiped off his face. He has this big smile on his face because he knows, like everybody else knows, that Heenan's going to get his comeuppance, you know, and Bobby has no line of defense anymore. His giant's gone. His tag team is gone. His, Haku's gone. Everybody that would stand in the way of Heenan and Warrior have left the building, so to speak, and now it's just that look on Heenan's face when he realizes what's about to happen. It's magic. It's laugh out loud when you see that look on his face when he turns to see the Warrior just standing there smiling from ear to ear.
As we said, Warrior just destroys Heenan, pins him. We get Warrior celebrating as Heenan's leaving, and as Heenan's walking to the back, the Warrior runs to the back and just clotheslines him just to be a dick. as the show ends. So overall for this match, like, I don't know if you guys do star ratings at all, but like, is this like a good, great, excellent? Like, how would you look at this match, Aaron?
I don't really do star ratings. Like, I kind of just look at it in terms of like how great the overall experience was. Like, and it's pretty great. Like, for me, like, it'd be between this match and the first match, like, in terms of, like, match of the night. But I think I'd give the edge to here just because of all the little iconic moments with Heenan and just how over the Warrior was.
Oh, yeah. Dan?
It's exactly what you wanted out of a Survivor Series match if you root for faces the way I used to. You kind of had that back and forth. You didn't have one team kind of – even with losing the Giant right away, both teams seemed pretty evenly matched. You basically kind of switched off eliminations, and then you had the guy that – you know, the most heat in that match once, you know, when all was said and done was Bobby Heenan, and the most popular person on the other team was the Ultimate Warrior. So to have it come down to those two guys and have Heenan get destroyed was what the people wanted to see on their Thanksgiving to end their night. You know, it was just perfect. I don't do star ratings, and I know when I look at Justin and Scott's ratings of like maybe like 2.5 stars or that sort of thing out of 5, you could maybe – there probably have been better wrestling matches, but as far as the complete Survivor Series package, I think that match had it all, and it probably deserved to go on last, really.
Oh, yeah. And I think it's a legitimately great match, and I would have it at 3.75, 4 stars. Like, I think this is a match that's actually really, really good if people go back and watch it, and the fall of the story just played out perfectly. The crowd is insane. Gorilla and Jesse were out of their mind great in this one, talking about Heenan the entire time. The ending sequence, all the little moments throughout. I think this is just an amazing match, and one of my favorite matches of all time.
why do you think we don't like, because you know how like we kind of like bitched about Hogan getting protected, and we bitched a bit about Duggan, but the Warrior is just as protected. Why doesn't he get as much flack, do you think?
Well, he was the rising star that they were building up, right?
Yeah.
And Duggan was just kind of on the mid-card. And Hogan, I think the only reason I bitch about Hogan in this one is because all of his opponents get DQ'd.
Yeah, that's like, true.
Like, he didn't even pin any of them. He just pinned DiBiase.
Who he's pinned 1,000 times before.
Yeah. Like,
exactly. Like we were saying before, all the rest of the team got DQ'd, and then the guy that probably really needed to look strong to kind of reestablish himself just eats the pin like normal. So that's why you get a lot of flack on that match. But yeah, exactly. You know, if this ended with Hogan posing, I'm sure people still would have been happy, but I don't know if it would have had the same effect if Warrior was in the middle of the card.
All right. So to me, this is my favorite show of all time. I've rewatched this show too many times to count. I'll just put it on for no reason. But where would this kind of Survivor Series show, you know, where would it be on your pantheon of Survivor Series in general, Dan?
Because of the sentimentality of it, by it being like the first, it basically started me on this path towards watching wrestling all the time, eventually writing about wrestling quite a bit, being on a podcast on a somewhat regular basis, you know, getting involved with Place to Be. It probably never would have happened had it not been for this show. So by that definition, it probably has to be at the top of my list of shows that I watch. I mean, I'm sure I've seen, like I've said before, I'm sure I've seen lots of other great wrestling matches over the years, but none of them would have been a possibility for me to see had it not been for Survivor Series 89. So it's always going to be near and dear, and it's certainly going to rank at the top of my list of Survivor Series that I've been able to experience.
Aaron?
I think you kind of got to look at the Survivor Series as like two separate things. Like, I think it's kind of hard to like compare the Survivor Series, like, I'd say like post 93, 94 to the early ones when they were all tag matches. Like, it's just a different show completely, right? Yeah. But when you put it in with the 88, 89, 87, I think it's got to be near the top because it's really fast paced compared to the other ones. And I love the other ones, but it's more fast paced. And like I said at the beginning, all the guys are over. So, like, whereas I still think I wish there would have been a tag match. Like, I love it. I love it, and I can't see putting it we talked about it being in the middle of the pack at the beginning. I can't see that. Like, for me, it's got to be in the top probably quarter for me.
Yeah, I'm scrolling through all the shows now. I've got to 92. It's the best one. Got to 94. It's the best one. 95's got some good. Maybe 95.
95 is good. 96 is interesting. It's got the Bret Austin match, right? Which is
That match is my favorite match of all. Like my
right.
I think one of the best matches of all time. But it's not a general overall better show. 99 stinks. 2000 stinks. 2001's got a good main event, but nothing else. Like, I don't know, maybe 95, but outside of that, I don't think there's a better Survivor Series show. I think Survivor Series has generally been disappointing since they got rid of the format they had in the early years, and I'm still in 2008, and I'm not seeing anything.
No. No, it stopped being important.
Yeah. It stopped being unique, you know, like particularly when you start to expand the pay-per-views to like one a month. Well, if Survivor Series has a bunch of singles matches and then the occasional traditional Survivor match, well, how is it any different than any other pay-per-view except for the fact that it's just so happens to be called the Survivor Series and has one match? Almost like Hell in a Cell. It's like, well, not every match is Hell in a Cell. We have one Hell in a Cell match, but we're still going to call it Hell in a Cell. Well, like with Survivor, you could do a Survivor Series match on any pay-per-view.
Yeah, but and they have.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly, yeah.
Well, I also just think that, like, the concept of Survivor Series, like, in terms of the tag matches, I think it only really works best when you have the super memorable characters like the 80s have. Because if you look at a Survivor Series like 97, which is no good, but, like, they have a lot of Survivor Series matches on the show, but you don't care about hardly anybody in it. You know, it's like, you know, the interrogator can pin everyone, but I don't care. But like in every one of these matches, you get a Jake the Snake or a Barber, or, you know, everybody means something. So it's interesting to put them together.
Oh, yeah. And I was trying to do one for this year if they did the 89 version. And I realized that they've completely destroyed the tag division, and it's really difficult.
Because
early in the year, they had 10 great tag teams. You can make a list of 10 great tag teams. Now there's 2 or 3. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you break up the primetime players, and then neither one of them does anything. One gets hurt, the other one kind of just hangs out on Superstars every week, you know?
And ruins NXT every week.
Right. Yeah. You know, you break up Sho and Mark Henry so that they can feud again, and it's like, great. That was awesome. And then now you basically have the Usos and the Rhodes, and then that's all you have, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, when we look at this card by itself, we had Rockers, Demolition, you had the Brainbusters when they were still together, you had Powers of Pain,
and the Rujos.
Yeah, we don't even have, like, I mean, they weren't great, but you don't even have the Bolsheviks on this card, but they were still around at this point, so, you know.
Yeah.
But I think, like, you could, if you take Cena's team versus the Authority, if you have Dean Ambrose make a team versus the Wyatt family, then you have your girls match, they could have AJ's team versus, who she feed him with, the Bella's team, and then, you know, you can have a whole show. You might need to use some NXT guys, but you could have a whole show.
And, you could have an NXT match.
Yeah. I tell you, I'd be a lot more pumped for that Survivor Series than whatever the hell we're going to get during that time.
I'd be pumped, but, like, really cautious because they wouldn't give anything any time to develop or
anything.
Well,
if you only have 5 matches on the show, they have to have time.
No, there's lots of time for video packages and announcers laughing and –
oh, yeah.
Commercials,
but let's not end on a down point here.
Yeah.
No, let's end on a horrible point. Who hates JBL?
Oh. But Survivor Series, why don't you give your final thoughts, Aaron?
Awesome, fun show. It was a struggle to find anything really to criticize, except really like a couple of booking decisions. But even then, like. Yeah, you can't really argue with putting Hogan over in that time period. Just fun, everyone over, and a beautiful, awesome time capsule of that era.
Dan?
really loved how they embraced the concept. The announcing was top-notch from the first minute to the very end. The team concept has been lost on current day shows, but you really got a feel for the camaraderie between the guys on each team, even from all of them wielding 2x4s to, you know, the celebration in the back when the team won. It was a different time period, but a fun time period that is definitely worth going back and rewatching.
Yeah, and like I said, when I went through all the shows, if this isn't the best Survivor Series, it's the second best behind 95. When people think about the format of Survivor Series, you know, people think about the 5-on-5s. People think about the 1990 with the Battle Royal. But I always think of 89, and I think it was the superior of all the formats. It's really sad that they only did it 1 year. It must have not did very well in the box office, but... You know, what can you do? With the network, you'd think, you know, they might have a chance of bringing it back, but clearly they are not interested in that. But I think it's a really great show. I think everyone should check it out. And if you don't want to, you know, sit for 3 hours, even though they're going to breeze by, at least go and watch that main event, because the Heenan family versus the Warriors is a legit, really fun, great match that's awesome in every way, from start to finish. From the announcers to the crowd to everyone in the ring, just really great stuff, including the Warriors promo before the match. You have to include that just to see, you know, Warrior pulling on Anvil's beard and all this bizarre stuff. But really great show, really fun show, and I thank you guys for joining me on it. And I actually, no one knows this that's listening, but I refuse to do any Survivor Series rewind that wasn't 89. I put my foot down on that one. But before we head out, Dan, do you have anything to plug?
Well, just a quick announcement. The Steve Carino Show, that we're currently on a little bit of a hiatus. We're going to rebrand a little bit, going to refresh the batteries. So, but stay tuned. The Steve Carino Show will return every other week here to the Place to Be Nation. And also, feel free, if you're not bored enough to watch Raw for 3 hours, but you have a few moments to read all about it, check out my Raw recap, usually Monday night, but into Tuesday morning. You will get to hear the latest and greatest that happens during that three-hour epic that is Monday night's flagship show. So that is the Raw Recap featuring yours truly each and every week here at Place to Be Nation.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, Dan, I've tried to watch Raw a few times live this year, and I just can't do it. And your recap is the source I look at to see if I'm actually going to download the show and watch it, or if I'm just going to ignore it this week and just know what happens by reading about it. So I appreciate that. Aaron, do you have anything to plug?
Sure. And if I could just second, Dan, your recap is very entertaining. So please check out Dan's recap. I enjoy it a lot, too. Check out the on Place to Be Nation. The Seinfeld rewatch is still going on. Myself, Justin Rosero, Andrew Flanagan, and Jordan Duncan are rewatching the series, and it's great. And if you're in the Montreal area, I'll be touring The Tempest by William Shakespeare. So please come and see The Tempest.
Amazing. Of course, if you want to hear more from me, I have the Pro Wrestling Super Show that comes out every Wednesday, and it's on the PWO-PTBN, the Pro Wrestling Only-Place to Be Nation podcast network, which you can get a lot of other great shows like Where the Big Boys Play, Titans of Wrestling, and recently there's a Facebook page according to that group where we talk about, you know, what's coming up, and there's discussion. You can ask questions that we'll answer on the shows, and you'll get to know what's going on. It's kind of a hub for the show, for all the different shows now, so I think that's very worthwhile. Search for that. I'm sure you can find it. But I'd like to thank my guests again, Dan and Aaron, and I guess I'll be back to talk about the Royal Rumble in January. Maybe we'll find out. Anyways, thank you. Bye.